Hello and welcome to Living Downstream. I'm Julie Lowe, the Environmental and Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and one of the hosts of Living Downstream. Today, our topic is the fascinating world of the beaver and their incredible role in our ecosystem. I'm delighted to be speaking with Audrey Taub and Cooper Leinhardt of the Slow Beaver Brigade. Can you please introduce yourselves a little further and tell me more about your organization?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. So my name is Audrey Taub. I'm the founder of the Slow Beaver Brigade, and Slow is San Luis Obispo, which is a county in the central coast of California. So we call it Slow for short, Slow Beaver Brigade. We are focused on educating our county on the benefits of beavers to our watersheds, that we have them here, that they're historically from here, and that it's a really good thing. I'll pass it to Cooper.
Thanks, Audrey. Yeah, my name is Cooper Leinhardt. I joined the Beaver Brigade in 2020, shortly after it began. I'm a Cal Poly grad in San Luis Obispo. I originally come from Chicago, but I live out here now. And ever since I came out to the Beaver Ponds, I've gone full beaver, as I like to say. And I do a lot of the education and outreach for the Beaver Brigade, as well as restoration. And I just recently formed a restoration business local to the Central Coast called Nature's Engineers, doing a process-based restoration and beaver coexistence.
Fantastic. Fantastic, you two. All right, let's start by the very basics because my audience ranges from people who know a lot to people who are interested and enthused and to people who are just beginning to know what we're talking about. Let's just characterize the beaver to start off. People I talk to, if they know anything at all, they just know it as the largest rodent in America or the Americas. And of course, that's not a great reputation to be a big rodent. So can you just characterize the beaver for us and kind of put it in context?
Yeah, I could take this one. So we love to start by saying how beavers are really similar to humans in a lot of ways. So beavers, they live in tight family groups. The mom and dad beavers mate for life, and then they have kits every year. And so, yeah, they're builders. They build their lodges where they live, and they also build their dams to create safe habitat for themselves. Because beavers are so big, they're the largest rodent in North America, they can even get up to 100 pounds. So they're a perfect snack for any predator. And so they need to build those dams so that they have a deep pool of water where they can dive to safety. Because yeah, when they're outside of the water, they're these big kind of blubbery, almost bowling ball shaped creatures that are pretty slow. But in the water, they're nice and quick, like a seal or an otter. So that's why they build these dams. And the dam building, that creates these beautiful wetland ecosystems. And so that supports so much other life for other animals.
So when beavers live in these groups, is it just mom and dad and the kits, or is it sometimes joined by several different families? Like if I see a beaver lodge, how many beavers potentially might I be looking at?
So beavers live in family units. So it's the parent beavers and then their youngest kits, and then also like the yearling beavers that are 1 or 2 years old. And so once the kits get to about 2 or 3 years old, they leave the house to go find their own mates and start their own dams. In one family of beavers, it could be anywhere from 6 to upwards of 10 beavers, depending on where you are. Around us in California, there's less water, so the beavers have less kits per year. So around us in Central Coast of California, they usually have about 2 kits every year. But up in the northern areas, like New York State or something, they could have, up to 10 kits per year have been observed. So around here, we usually have maybe 6 to 8 beavers in one family, also called a colony. But yeah, up in the east or north, there could be higher numbers.
Okay, so it is just one family. It's a related family.
Just one family.
All right, cool. And that's interesting because I've heard, of course, that some animals have larger litters, mice and rats and whatnot, have larger litters when the food is plentiful. So you say beavers too can modify their litter size based on the supplies they have in their environment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's so cool. That's so intelligent. Tell me about the historic role of beavers in our environment before the arrival of Europeans or the Western folk.
Historically, the range is pretty large, but I've seen anywhere from 60 to 400 million beavers on this continent, which is amazing because that's about how many people live in North America. So just in their range is just in North America. There's been up to 400 million before European contact. And then very early on, it really funded the Europeans coming to this continent, the beaver trade. And they call it the beaver rush before the gold rush, and pretty much decimated completely. I think the numbers I read was down to 100,000 beavers remaining. So for our area in California, that really left the left people with this idea that beavers were never here and historically not from here. So that has been a big part of kind of what our education has been, is bringing that knowledge of, no, actually they were here. It's just way before anybody's memory, because it was a really long time ago that they were wiped out. So yeah, do you want to add more, Cooper?
Yeah, that was a good description of it. Before Western contact, I know a lot of, you know, indigenous tribes had different relationships with beavers. Several tribes revered the beaver as a sacred creature because it would hold water on the land in typically arid ecosystems. I know they were also looked for as like a cultural community leader. They were who you would look for to see how to run a community to keep everything peaceful, which I think is like an amazing thing, because they keep this ecosystem perfectly in balance and they're pretty non-confrontational. So they were looked for wisdom in that.
So they were not only keeping their family in line, they were keeping the whole ecosystem in line, right?
Yeah.
So when you say they were not wiped out, well, the fur trade, I guess it started in the East and they trapped all that way and then they just kept moving west, right?
Yes, and there were Russian fur traders coming from the West also on boats. So I think it came from both sides. Yeah.
Oh, I see, from the West Coast as well. Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there were these fur companies that their goal was to create a fur desert in the West. So just hunt every animal with fur so that they didn't have competition from local trappers who were trying to make their own way out there.
So who didn't have competition? The beavers didn't have competition, or the trappers didn't have competition?
The fur companies, yeah. I believe it was, I can't remember the name of the fur company, but
yeah, I think that was Hudson Bay's method of trying to slow the Western expansion of the Americas by, if they take away the incentive, maybe they'll stop expanding into their trapping territory. So they created this fur desert out west.
I think I remember what you're talking about. I guess the English and the Americans were fighting over territory out here. And the English thought that if they removed the attraction of the West, which at that time, before gold, was considered the beaver furs, they removed that attraction, then the other Americans wouldn't push so hard to come out here and take it over. So I understand they just wiped out all the beavers. And apparently Hudson Bay was considered a pretty good company as far as taking care of the ecosystem before that. They were aware that smart harvesting would leave the moms and leave a breeding population. But when they came out west, I guess they decided we need to remove everything so there's no more attractions for other settlers to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my understanding too.
I think that's fascinating. Yeah. And I love the way, Cooper, you were talking about the Native American relationship with the beaver, that they look to them as guides. And they do with so many things, so many animals out here, which is just fascinating. Do they eat the beavers? Are beavers edible?
Beavers are edible.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, they have a pretty rich meat. I've seen some recipes for beaver chili. So people have eaten beavers, especially the trappers in the wintertime. The beaver tails were full of fat. That's where the beavers are able to store excess fat in the wintertime. And so that was like considered a delicacy by some woodsmen.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I understand some tribes would eat them and some would not. Some, like you were saying, held them in great esteem and they wouldn't eat them. You said that the beaver, they were looked to as kind of not masters of the ecosystem, but diplomats of the ecosystem, let's say. But they maintained a healthy ecosystem for everybody and everything. What were the other critters that they were maintaining this ecosystem for? Who else benefits from the beaver?
Almost all of the native creatures of North America benefit from the beaver. I believe there's a study that like 80% of native fauna will use riparian habitat at one point in their life cycle. So nearly all of the native animals would use the beaver habitat. And one of my favorite stories about beavers being these kind of community leaders is that so they build these great lodges where they stay safe and sleep, and they have like multiple rooms that they chew out for themselves in their lodges. One's like a mud room where they dry off, and then they have their bedroom, which is perfectly dry, and they have their nest in there. And so sometimes other animals like muskrats or wood rats will see this lodge and they'll want to move in there because it's a great place to live. And so the beavers, instead of kicking them out, they'll instead chew them out their own room. So then you have multiple species all living inside the beaver lodge.
Oh, that's hilarious. So it's like your kid moving back home. You just give them a spot and then you all get
your
along.
Your cousin. Yeah.
Your cousin moving back home. What happens when you have a beaver colony and you have other critters that seem to be just like beavers, like nutria and muskrats and whatnot? Do they get along? Are they complementary? Or do the nutria and muskrat kind of harm the work the beaver are doing?
I don't know much about nutria at all because we don't have them down here. I definitely see them with muskrat and they seem to just all get along really fine. The muskrat I see in the day and the beaver in the evening. So it's possible they just, you know, maybe miss each other. Yeah, about nutria.
All right. I was at a pond the other day and I was so excited to see a beaver and I sent my video all over and people all corrected me to say that was a nutria. I was common.
So you have them in your watershed, nutria.
Yes, apparently we do. And I did not know that. So now I know. Now I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've learned that nutria apparently tear up the banks a lot more than beaver do. So those big holes that you see maybe 5, 6, 8, 10 feet up the bank are, I'm told, are probably nutria. And the beaver keep it low in their lodges and whatnot. At any rate, that was disappointing for me. So I know the Northwest loves their salmon. Salmon is an iconic animal out here. And beaver are not for many, many people. Can you tell me about the relationship between salmon and beaver? Because we do love our salmon.
There's this old saying we like to reference that beaver taught salmon how to jump. And so researchers have found that beavers and salmon have co-evolved for about 20 to 30 million years. As beavers learn their dam building abilities, the salmon, you know, and co-inhabited the same streams. And so they had to learn how to jump over these dams. And so over millions of years, salmon got, you know, really skilled at jumping. And they actually love the beaver habitat because when the beavers create their dams, it makes this slow moving water, slow water pond with lots of insect life and lots of food for the fish. So they don't have to use nearly as much energy to stay in the creek. And they have a huge food source. So they found that salmonids that live in beaver habitat tend to get about 40% bigger than salmonids that don't live in beaver habitat. So it's a great symbiotic relationship. And yeah, the salmon love beaver habitat.
And this is probably speaks to the salmon returning home to breed, as well as it does to the fry on their way back down. As they're being raised in their nurseries. Like, what about other animals? Who else relies on beavers besides, well, you know, I would assume the, you know, the frogs and that stuff. But what about some other species that people love? Like I hear, is it trumpeter swan perhaps one that relied on beaver dams?
Yeah, definitely. Especially up in the Northwest where y'all are. I don't believe we have trumpeter swans down here in San Luis, but it's pretty amazing. We have these game cameras that we have at the beaver ponds and they're pointed at the water and we've caught 83 different species of animals on our video cameras, all visiting the beaver ponds. Oh. And that's like one of the highest biodiversity rates in the whole county. And that is doesn't even include fish or insects. So it's pretty incredible. We've seen bobcats walking across the top of the dams. A lot of animals use the dams as bridges. So their dams are super strong. So they could even hold moose or bear that are trying to cross on top of the dam. And so, yeah, we see bobcats sitting up there, like using it to fish or hunt for ducks off the top of the dam. We see so many different duck species that I didn't even know existed. They love using the beaver habitat. We've actually seen skunks swimming across the water, which I didn't know they could do. Turtles, reptiles, pretty much. The bird population, kingfishers, herons, egrets. It's like the Serengeti, how it's been described in our area.
When did beavers go from being pelts to pests? There was a crossover where people were hunting them for the pelts, and then they became pests to everybody.
Yeah, the way I think about it is The beavers were so plentiful. They were in every river, lake, and stream, and, you know, almost 400 million of them. And so they were hunted. And so they had these lush, wide floodplains that, you know, were wetlands. And then when the beavers were removed and their dams were removed, a lot of the creeks, they drained to a smaller size. And so then you had this really attractive floodplain on either side of the creeks. And that's where humans naturally wanted to move in. And they may or may not have realized that was, you know, traditionally beaver habitat. So people moved into these floodplains, great farming, because the beavers, you know, they stack nutrients over thousands, millions mm-hmm. of years, and it creates super fertile soil. So great farming soil, you know, great grazing land. And so, yeah, the people moved into these really attractive areas. And then if beavers, you know, the few beavers that were left, if they tried to move back into their, you know, ancestral areas, they end up creating dams and flooding what are now people's property. And so since there are so few beavers and humans, you know, don't like when other creatures have ideas and mess with the things that we make, that's, you know, very easy to label them as a pest. And especially because they're in the rodent family, I think it just made it quite easier for people to label them as pests and deal with them by trapping in lethal methods instead of trying to coexist. Especially back in the day when we had more water on our landscape and people weren't as worried about drought and things like that, it was easier to just deal with beavers lethally, label them as pests.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, a real lack of understanding of what they were doing and providing to our watersheds. And I think, you know, initially that our country spent a lot of time clearing out all the woody debris to make travel easier. And just think that what a catastrophe that was to do.
When I was raised in Montana, we thought and we were taught that a fast moving stream, a fast, clear, straight moving stream is going to be cooler and better somehow and cleaner somehow. If it just moves, the faster it's going, the straighter it's going, the better the stream. So every year we'd come up and we would clear out the stream. We clean, you know, we get rakes and clear out all the debris and make that stream run just as fast as it could. They also had cattle in that pasture, and that was a problem because if the stream was not flowing quickly, the cattle pastures would flood. And that was a problem. We were also taught that beavers are dangerous. If your dog comes up to the creek, the beaver will take your dog. It will attack your dog and drag your dog under. So there were a lot of, yeah, there were a lot of, I guess, myths that I was raised from a, kind of a ranching family out west. That they were a big rodent.
And that's fascinating. I haven't heard that one. I've heard things like, mm-hmm. oh, they'll eat all the fish, which is interesting that people still think that beavers eat fish. Don't eat fish.
Yeah, they're herbivore, right? They just eat
yeah,
plants.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of the trouble with beavers is really misinformation, like a real lack of understanding about them.
You guys are a little bit more south than we are, and drought and water is a problem down there. Tell me what beaver have to do with the abundance of water.
The cool thing about our area is it's so obvious the beaver benefits. We started leading tours to beaver habitat in 2020. And I mean, people who have lived here their whole lives and they just did not believe beavers lived in our creeks and streams. And it's really amazing because it gets really, really dry and really hot here. And we'll walk out there and it's just everything's brown. All the plants have long gone dormant. But when you get close to the beaver ponds, I mean, it goes from 100 degrees to probably 80, like the temperature drops at least 10 degrees. And it's cool and it's lush and it's green. And as the drought is happening, getting drier and drier, it's just green and lush. And you have no knowledge of it in the beaver pond because the beavers build their dams and slow down the water so it remains longer on the landscape. It gives it time to sink down so that it replenishes our groundwater. And it also spreads out so that our plant roots can actually reach the water all along the river. So it makes such an impactful difference. Beavers make such a difference visually in our landscape here because it is so dry everywhere else. And the Salinas River, where we have been monitoring a lot of the beaver activity, it often runs underground most of the year now, except where the beavers are. So the beavers will build their dams, store up the water, and then all year long, there's water, there's pools, there's running flow only where they are. And it's astounding to people from our area to learn that, oh, there's actually running surface water all year long in the areas where the beavers are, because that's not what you see in other spots.
And I think what you say is really fascinating, because again, from a ranching family, I remember when it was dry out in the pastures, you'd have a big horse tank, basically, or, you know, cattle tank of water out there. But the water was just in that tank, right? So the horses and the cattle would go to that tank. I think a lot of people might think of a beaver pond as that's the hole of water. And what you are saying is something a little bit more. That's not just where the water is. The beavers do the water that the beavers are collecting is not just what you see in the pond. It's actually much more. And that's what the important part is, even more than the water they have in the pond, at least for us, is what they're causing to happen under the ground that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because that slowing it down is just giving the water time to sink down. And they also dig these channels out to the sides that allow them to stay in the water and access more food, more willows, more cottonwoods. But in effect, it spreads out the ponds even more. So then there's more channels going out. The riparian area is getting wider and wider and wider, much more complex. And then the water has just more places to go. Once a beaver builds a dam and starts ponding, we'll watch the water rise downstream of the dam. So that's now the groundwater is rising. So it's clearly affecting what's going on under the water because we are under the ground because we're seeing the effects of it downstream of the pond. It's not just the water in the pond. It's actually, there's actually more water. There's more ability of this landscape to hold water. So that helps not only droughts, but also floods. If you have enough of these dams, it starts to slow the intensity of floods, and the earth is already prepared to hold a lot of water. So it can take in so much more, reducing that intensity of flooding.
And I think even that would affect, I would assume, people's wells. We have so many wells around our area that are going dry that people had those wells for hundreds of years in their family, but they're going dry now and they can't understand why.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely. It affects that. That's happening in our area also. A lot of wineries coming in and putting in really deep, deep wells, and the shallower homestead wells are going dry. And a lot of that is overuse and degraded creeks and streams.
Yeah, beavers, they really turn these streams into like, they're like losing reaches right now where the water is just sinking and going down into the groundwater, and they turn them into gaining reaches where the water is consistently being cycled under the dam and resurfacing downstream. So they're like reversing the process and continually raising the groundwater level, even if it hasn't rained in 6 months.
And not only that, that water that cycles, how about the purification issues with that? Do they help that as well?
Great question. Yeah, it's amazing. They act as these amazing water filters, because not only are they slowing down the water and settling out those pollutants and heavy metals and excess nutrients, so then all of those things can be cycled in with the soil microbes and naturally processed instead of getting, you know, shot right out to the ocean and creating these dead zones where it's, you know, too much nitrogen in the water in the ocean. There are these amazing water filters, and they, yeah, get cycled, and then it comes up fresher, cooler, and cleaner on the other side.
For our guests just tuning in, this is Living Downstream on 99.7 KQUA. I'm your host, Julie Lowe, and we're speaking with Audrey Taub and Cooper Leinhart of the Slow Beaver Brigade. I understand that the beaver has been classified, and I think this has just changed, but has been classified as a predator. And for an herbivore, that's kind of strange to me. Can you tell me more about that?
That's a funny one. Yeah, that's I believe that's a specific to the state of Oregon. Yeah, so in California, I don't think we had that classification. But okay. Yeah, what a funny thing. I guess they were predating the trees. So they got labeled as a predator.
That's a predator.
Which is really funny because even though beavers chew the trees, they don't usually kill them by chewing them. So that's another interesting thing. They've co-evolved with these trees, especially like cottonwoods, willows, aspens, for, 20 to 30 million years. So even if they chew a tree down to its base, it's very likely that that tree will sprout out new sprouts. And so these new sprouts, they taste really bitter to the beavers for several years. And so the beavers won't chew those new sprouts usually. And so that allows the trees to grow up again. And that actually also helps cycle more carbon from the atmosphere, because a fully grown tree doesn't need to absorb that much CO2 to grow. But once it's growing new stalks, all that CO2 is getting locked into the new branches as new wood. And so they really cycle the carbon and keep the trees healthier, because the trees are expect that coppicing. They need that cutting to, revitalize. So yeah, beavers don't even, they're not even predators to the trees. They're they're allies to the trees. Yeah.
All right. That's funny. So in Oregon, we have predator beavers. And apparently in California, you have invasive beavers, non-natives, right? You'd mentioned that briefly before, that some people think that beavers are not native to California. How have you talked about that with your people?
Yeah, well, luckily for us, there are other beaver groups that have did like the hard, heavy lifting on that topic. And we're able to, and I'm talking about Occidental Arts and Ecology Center and Heidi Perryman over at Wirtha Dam. They really did the heavy lifting of redrawing the maps and coming up with they published a paper in 2013 about the new historical range of beavers. And so really it was bringing their study to our area. Just everywhere we go, we'd carry that big map and say, look, they are from here. This was printed in CDFW's journal. And really helped just sharing those stories that were in that paper, that they really are from here. We did talk to the Northern Chumash tribe here in our area, and they confirmed, oh yeah, we have a word for beaver. We have a beaver song, they were here. So it just more confirmation. And we just share those stories out with people.
Beavers, of course, famous for altering their environment. And from the eyes of a person, this is often damaging. So how do you address this to a property owner who has some beavers that are messing with his property in his eyes or her eyes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of people in our area weren't aware that actually it's very possible to coexist with beavers. I like to say that beavers are smart, but humans, we can outsmart them if we really want to. Mm-hmm. On the East Coast, people have been doing beaver coexistence for upwards of 20 years now. Mike Callahan from the Beaver Institute, he started doing it on the East Coast. And so now, there have been over thousands of these beaver coexistence devices that have gone in. It's very possible with just a little bit of thoughtful engineering to have beavers live with you on your property. One of the easiest ways is by wrapping your trees with wire fencing. And so that discourages the beavers from chewing any of the trees that you don't want them to take down if you have an important tree on your property. And there's also ways that you can manage the beavers flooding. So if a beaver builds a dam and say it floods your yard or your horse pasture, we can actually run a pipe through a beaver dam. These are called flow devices. And so when you have a pipe that runs through a beaver dam and then you put a little intake cage on either end of the pipe so that the beavers can't dam up the pipe, you can basically notch the dam, set the pipe wherever you want the water level to be, and you create this permanent leak in the beaver dam. So you're able to outsmart the beavers so that they can keep on building their dam as high as they want, but the water level will never rise past the height of that pipe. These devices are pretty easy to maintain. You just got to clean them maybe once or twice a year, and they'll last for a decade or more. And so that way you can keep the beavers on your property. And if they still have enough water, they won't feel the need to leave. They can still stay there and keep all the great benefits, recharge your groundwater, create this amazing wildlife ecosystem, and you won't have to worry about them felling your favorite trees or flooding your property.
How do you know how much water the beaver needs? Like, that must take some scientific analysis. How deep does it need to be for the beaver to think that's okay? For that you have a leak out of it, the bottom of its dam?
Yeah, the number that I've heard is that beavers typically need about 3 feet of water to feel safe. And I believe that's actually more of an East Coast number because they need 3 feet of water so that they can create a food cache in the winter that's big enough for when the ice freezes the top of the pond. They can still get under there and grab their food. So I believe on the West Coast, it might be a little bit smaller, somewhere between 2 to 3 feet. It would feel safe.
Because it, what's the difference? Because it doesn't freeze? I mean, wouldn't the water still freeze down that deep, or it doesn't freeze that much out here?
Yeah, it doesn't freeze out here for us. Probably wherever it does freeze, I think beavers would want 3 feet of water.
That's, I was going to say, in California, so yeah, it probably doesn't freeze as much there.
Yeah, at least not in the southern half. Yeah.
That makes sense. Describe to me a land that's controlled by a beaver dam. What does that river look like, or what does that riparian zone look like when a beaver is controlling it? Is it mushy? In other words, do people get upset about that? Can they walk up to their pond and fish from the side? Or is it mushy? People bothered by kind of unsolid ground around a dam that's maintained by a beaver.
I haven't heard that. But yeah, Cooper, do you have a...
We haven't had those particular concerns, but yeah, mushy, messy, that's how I like to describe a beaver wetland. They definitely encourage a lot of that riparian growth on the outskirts of the pond. So it is a little bit harder to just walk right up and see this huge expanse of water. You do usually have to, you know, get in there a little bit. I like to say that's how you know it's a healthy habitat. But yeah, if you have a pond, a beaver wetland that's like on someone's property, let's say they have a cattle ranch, one thing we'd recommend is that you fence off the area from the cattle so that they don't go into that year round and, you know, trudge on the dams and you know, break the dams and you know, drop their cow pies in the water and stuff. So it is nice to give the beavers some area, and then you'll find that your grass, your pasture, you know, right alongside the beaver wetland is greener for longer and grows grass, you know, more productively. So it is a little messy, but like a healthy wetland has much more ecosystem benefits, far wider range.
Because as we're talking, I'm literally remembering growing up as a very small 5, 6, 7, 8, and the pasture around the beaver was very mushy. We didn't want the cattle in there because they got stuck. And then they tore it up because their hooves would tear up that fragile ground that was mushy. And that was the excuse to get rid of that beaver, that they're destroying the pasture. But your argument is keep them out of that particular area close to the pond, and the green growth that they're encouraging will extend farther out to the pasture where the cattle are kept.
Mm-hmm. Is that correct? And will last longer into the year as well, because that groundwater table will be higher. And so... Yeah.
And your creek won't dry up by the end of the season, hopefully, if the beaver is taking care of it. So if a landowner finds beaver on their property and they want to do something to keep them, and they have the land that allows them the flexibility, is there any assistance they can have to do that? Are there any grants or groups working that will help them that they don't have to fund it all out of their own pocket?
Yes, great question. So the Beaver Institute, they're training people to do beaver coexistence devices all across the country. So if you go onto their website, beaverinstitute.org, you can see an interactive map to see where there are certified beaver coexistence people all across the country. So if there's one near your area, you could contact them and have them come out to your site. And they also offer this grant where you can get $500 to help you pay for the cost of the beaver coexistence devices to encourage you to start that process. So that's all on beaverinstitute.org.
And Cooper, your group too does this kind of work.
Yes, we do. Yeah, I've trained as the Beaver Corps. I'm trained in doing coexistence devices. So yeah, the Slow Beaver Brigade, you could reach out to us on our website. And then my new business, Nature's Engineers, does these beaver coexistence services.
So how would that happen? Let me say I have 3 beavers on my property, 5 beavers. Uh-huh. I would call Cooper. And then what would be the first step? What would you do?
I'd come out for a site visit, meet you, get to see the beaver habitat, see what we're working with, what trees, you know, might need to be protected, and what the possibility of putting flow devices into the beaver dams. I'd also check for road crossings up or downstream, and they're, because beavers love to plug up culverts as well. So there's some protective fences that you can use to keep them from plugging up culverts as well. So yeah, I would come out, see what, you know, necessary tasks would need to be done, and then give you the estimate and get to work hopefully soon.
And then you could also help people find funding sources if they hadn't already done so.
Definitely. Yeah, that's something that we are very willing to help with. Yeah, and then hopefully we could get some people out there and do a little tour with the Beaver Brigade and show people how possible it is to do beaver coexistence in our area. And it could be an educational site as well.
What about if people just don't want them? They don't want the beaver, but they don't want to shoot them because, you know, they're animal lovers as well, but they don't want the beaver. What are the options for them then?
Well, at this point in California, there aren't any options. And it is changing, but it is not legal at this point to relocate a beaver. So if they want them removed, they would have to get a permit from California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And the good thing is that they have just now instituted a policy that at the very least, Fish and Wildlife has to educate the landowner about coexistence options, and they have to try to coexist with them. And if they still can't figure out a way to live with the beaver, then they'll issue them a permit and lethally take them. But it's a big shift. Now at least they're being educated on the options. They have to try to coexist. And CDFW is in the process of creating a translocation relocation policy. This is all new. They're doing some pilots this year. So the time frame is pretty unknown at this point. Hopefully soon they'll be allowing relocations from property. But as of right now, they would have to be lethally removed.
Are there groups working to change those laws?
Well, the laws are being changed. It's just the getting CDFW up to speed to where they know relocation isn't actually that simple. You can't just take a beaver and move it in a stream and expect it to stay and thrive. You really have to capture the whole family. You have to move them typically to a site that has food for them. So with willows, with a riparian area, sometimes it's very helpful if you actually create a little bit of a habitat for them, like maybe a human-made beaver dam, like a beaver dam analog, BDA structure set up first. And then their chances of surviving and staying are much greater. I think I've read statistics are pretty low when you just move a beaver. Up in Washington state, the Metal Beaver Project has been successfully relocating beavers for quite a while. Cooper, you might be able to speak more to that.
A few years ago, I trained up with the Tulalip tribe in Northern Washington, and they have a beaver relocation program as well. And so, yeah, they attempt to capture the whole family at once and then keep them in a holding facility with running water to make sure they're healthy and have a place to relocate them to. And then they'd relocate the whole family to the new area. But it's definitely no guarantee they'll stay in the area you relocate them because they have a mind of their own. Yeah, it is always a little bit riskier to relocate beavers. And so we always encourage coexistence first. And one of the things we've heard from, I believe, people at the Umpqua tribe was that if they relocate beavers from an area, they say that they'll take the beavers from the area so that the people can prepare for when the beavers return. Yeah, because if it's beavers are there, odds are that beavers is good habitat and more beavers will move into the area. So relocating them could give the landowner some time to get their habitat ready for the beavers to move back in and have it not be as problematic.
I know the sea otter was overhunted in Oregon, and we have no more wild sea otters on our coast. And one of the problems with that, they say, is that when they do introduce some and relocate some here, that the otters go home. They have that kind of homing instinct and they just go back to where they came from. Is that something with beavers? What if I took some beavers from California and I moved them to Pennsylvania? Would that work, or do they have a homing instinct, or would they settle in, do you think?
That'd be quite a trip for the beavers. They do have that homing instinct. I think if they were cross country, they'd eventually settle into some new habitat. But yeah, if you move them a few miles, and especially if they're separated from their family, they will try to move back.
So would the kits try to move back, or would the mom try to move back, or are they both, they'll both go searching each for each other?
Probably both, especially the mother beavers. Yeah, they would go back to where their kits were if they weren't with them. And so they have incredible sense of smell, and they use that to navigate a lot. And I think they have a very innate sense of direction as well. So yeah, they would definitely try to find their home stream, and they can travel over land large distances if they want to. In Canada, it was recorded one beaver traveled over 100 miles, mostly over land. They feel much safer in the water, but if they feel the need to, they will go over land.
So how old would a young beaver be that wouldn't try to go back and find its mom, for instance? Because at some age, they do move on, right? They move out of their mom's house. And so how old would a beaver be that he might be able to be relocated by himself and not with his family?
2 to 3 years old is when they disperse and start their own family. And so, yeah, at that age, there have been, you know, beavers that are trapped to be relocated that are just like dispersing juveniles. And then they usually, if they can, they try to pair it up with another dispersing juvenile of the opposite gender. But if they can't, they will just relocate that beaver by itself if they need to. And another interesting anecdote, sometimes the beaver father will lead the yearling kits out and help them find a new home. And so, yeah, help them get settled, and then he'll return back to the main.
Oh, cool. How far away would he lead them, if possible?
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know exact numbers, but I bet they would go miles. They usually, in our area, we see beavers are typically have about a half mile range is their habitat. And then there's usually a bit of a gap, and then the next beaver family has about a half mile area that they maintain and build dams on. So yeah, probably at least a mile away is a typical in our area, at least.
Oh, cool. All right. That makes sense. All right. I've asked a lot of people about beaver, and the people who are against beaver have concerns. And one concern I hear a lot about is disease transmission. And I think it's because beavers have they're the largest rodent. And of course, rodents have such a terrible reputation about disease. Tell me about beavers and disease transmission. Is that a thing?
Audrey, would you like this one?
Yeah, what we hear a lot is giardia is the question. Like, beavers, that means they're bringing giardia to your streams. And that is not true. Beavers, giardia really comes from people and cattle, and it gets into the streams, and beavers can be infected with it. And then it can reproduce in their gut. And so you can have giardia in beaver streams, but it's not actually coming from the beavers. It's coming from around the beavers. So they're kind of getting blamed for that because they can get infected with it also.
And another one, I mentioned this earlier, but human wildlife conflicts. Are they dangerous? Are they dangerous to your dog?
No. I have only heard of one instance. Maybe there was two, and both instances were like beavers had contacted rabies, and that was the only instance where a beaver would attack a person. It's incredibly rare. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're so shy. What the normal experience is, if you go out to a beaver pond and there's a beaver there, it's going to slap its tail really loud, duck down really low, and get away.
Okay.
And that is its big bad behavior. It is very startling, and it does kind of sound like a gunshot, but it's not. it's a really loud noise, and that works really, really well for them. So they don't seem to have to attack. So I think it's really rare. I mean, I'm sure that if you somehow got a baby kit out of its mom's clutches, it would do something, but going in the water, walking around a beaver lodge or a beaver pond, nothing like that is gonna get you attacked by a beaver.
I literally remember riding my horse along the Missouri River in Montana and being told, don't ride along the river, because I had a dog with me as well, because it will come up and attack your dog.
That's
as you're
amazing.
Riding along. So, isn't that funny?
That is funny. Because I don't ever hear that.
Anything like that. Yeah. We've heard the other way around, where it can be unsafe for unleashed dogs to be in beaver habitat because they'll sometimes try to attack the beavers. There have been cases of that. But yeah, I've never heard it the other way around. Yeah, dogs, you know, that smell, it's like a predatory smell for the beavers. So they'll try to avoid it as much as they can.
Isn't this funny? The stories you're raised with. And yeah. you just assume it's the truth. It's all you've heard. So you guys have a lot of educating to do. I mean, that sounds like that's one of your primary roles.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of our primary roles because people don't even know they exist in this area. You know, people barely know, you know, that our rivers are rivers, really, because they're so flashy. You know, they just have water in them just for an instant in the winter and then they're gone. You know, it's really their watershed education is definitely really, really needed in this area.
I did an interview on watershed, and my expert was saying, don't call it a watershed. She says, we need to stop that word. She says, call it a water catchment, because that is the job, is the catching the water, not shedding the water. Mm-hmm. But she says, words are important, and water catchment is what we all have to remember, because we need to store that water. And I guess, especially down south, it's really an issue. And it's an issue up here, too. I was surprised how dry Oregon got, where we are particularly. It got extremely dry. We had one of the biggest fires in the nation just right 5 miles away, because we just got so incredibly dry. And we're a logging community here. And another issue I hear with beavers is they will they'll destroy the forest. They can have negative impacts. They can destroy when they're creating wetlands. They have the negative effect of loss of valuable timber. Can you talk to me about that? Are they taking all the trees?
So yeah, that is a very interesting question. And so when the beavers were removed originally a few hundred years ago, that dried out the landscape incredibly and allowed the timber that usually did not live in those wet meadow areas to encroach all the way down to the creek. So now you have all this timber that's actually sucking up the groundwater and acting, you know, as not as it should, as it evolved to. And so now, you know, if a beaver moves back into an area, it can create a dam and flood out these trees. And so it will cause some tree dying. That is interesting. So yeah, I can't really speak to that from the timber side, but I do know that when they create these dead snags, these dead trees, it's actually also super valuable habitat, and that's a natural process. And so woodpeckers, there's lots of animals that rely on dead standing wood. From an ecosystem point of view, it's actually, they're doing what they're supposed to, and it creates some valuable habitat. But yeah, it could cause some tree dying, but that's just returning the forest to its healthy state.
That leads to my next question, especially for you all down there, where it's an invasive species, right? It wasn't ever supposed to be there. Another argument I hate, which is, of course, fallacy. Let's make sure no one comes in late in the interview and hears me say that. But they say, well, when you bring these beaver in our areas, they disrupt our local ecosystem. It leads to competition with native species and changes our vegetation. So I know you've addressed that a little bit, but could you talk more about that? Are they disrupting your local ecosystem?
Yeah, no. I mean, they're a keystone species, so they're providing the habitat for other species to live. I mean, the one thing about beavers is, you know, they are so egalitarian. They are creating a habitat for whomever you have there. So whomever your native species or whoever is there. So if you do have an invasive problem, you're still going to have an invasive problem. If, you know, it's just creating habitat for everyone. They're not saying you get to stay and you get to go. That's what we do. Beavers don't do that. So they move in and create the conditions of how they used to be. But whoever's there is going to grow.
Yeah, I've heard some people have concerns about fish passage barriers. If a beaver moves in and creates a dam, you know, will the fish be able to get over the dam? And so, yeah, many fish have evolved to jump over the beaver dams. And often there's beaver canals that go to the side that fish can cross that way. But I always like to say habitat is a fish passage. Like if there's no habitat, there could be no fish there at all. And this Salinas River in so many areas dries up completely in the summertime. But where we have beavers, they have the dam that's 100 feet long and there's a 130-foot pond of water behind it. That's the habitat that the fish will live in. So it's startling to see the difference it makes when you have beavers versus no beavers, especially in a more arid area like ours.
And what do you say to the people who have irrigation structures in place? You know, we just drove through California a couple weeks ago and we saw all those man-made canals. And I assume a lot of water, or a lot of money has been put into those man-made canals. What do you say to those folk when they say, we've done all of this work and now you're going to bring beaver in and they're going to destroy our whole structure? How do you address them?
That is an interesting question. And we haven't quite, put our foot in that door yet because, okay. Yeah, we're just trying to advocate that having beavers here in our natural ecosystems, they hold the water for everyone. So they recharge our groundwater basins and then we pull it up to farm with. And so having beavers here in a natural river or creek where it's not a concrete channel is very beneficial. And so that's the message that we're trying to convey. Having beavers here where they're supposed to be is beneficial for everybody. And so, yeah, if there are those channelized irrigation ditches, there might be solutions if beavers move in to do some coexistence. If not, then hopefully we can get some relocation going in the next few years to get beavers out of areas where they just simply can't live and bring them to areas where they could.
And again, the ones I saw were cement lined. It's kind of like that horse trough I was talking about out in the middle of the pasture, that the water can't get out of the horse trough. It can't go into the ground. So these cement lined canals just take the water through quickly. And it doesn't benefit any place that it passes through.
No, the aqueduct system.
Aqueducts,
in California is pretty. I'm from New York, so when I first saw that, I'm like, "What on earth is this big, concrete river? Like, what is going on?" Yeah, it's pretty amazing all that water manipulation that has happened in this state. And my guess is there's going to be some corrections going on at some point. But right now, I do think beavers really can't live there. And the best we need to do is to have a legal way to safely get them to the habitat where that people want them. And that's what we come across much more than the other is, I want beavers in my creek. How can I get one? And it's like, well, hopefully soon is what we say, but you can start preparing now. Or beavers, you can make sure you have willow, you can get a BDA structure in your pond and create the habitat. So when that they do come, they'll be more likely to stay.
Yeah, that's one of the most exciting things that we're working on right now is doing these restoration projects where you're building beaver dam analogs. And so it's called process-based restoration because you're putting back in the natural processes that these rivers and creeks need to be healthy and have self-sustainability. So yeah, you just like beavers, you don't build one BDA, you build a whole series of them. And mm-hmm. you do it and you mimic the beavers. You use all natural materials and you create these dense piles in the creeks. And so you create a whole series of them. And then when the flows come, it slows down the water, spreads it out, and really starts priming the habitat for the beavers to move back in.
Do you guys ever go into the schools and talk to the young kids about this? I don't mean young, but like junior high and whatnot. Do you have any programs that go into the schools and educate
Not
the young
yet.
Ones?
That's kind of a goal of ours to go into Good the time. Schools. We do have private schools. We have field trips from private schools out to the site, but we haven't yet gotten into the school system, which is our next steps.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, we haven't been in the public school system, but we've done presentations to kids like the Junior Rangers clubs that happen in the summertime. And the kids just love learning about beavers. They get so enthused. And we have some really fun activities where we have a tub and you can get a bucket of sticks and mud and have the kids build their own mini beaver dams.
Neat.
Pour the water in and they can just see how much they can hold the water. And it's just so obvious to the kids. And so they love it.
That's fantastic. Wow. Because, it took me 50 years to figure out that the beaver wouldn't eat my dog when I was riding along the Missouri River. So, I mean, of course, we have to start young. Audrey, you said you're from New York. How did you get out here? And how did you, this is your organization, right? The Slow Beaver Brigade. Tell me how it came about putting that together?
Well, I moved out here in 2005, and at that time I was really into tracking animals. And by our river, the substrate's really sandy, really fine sand. So it holds the details of the tracks really well. So I was there a lot. And I was just learning about the animals in this community here. And I stumbled upon the beaver ponds. And I couldn't believe it because it's so dry and arid. And to see such a lush oasis. Was unbelievable. And I was like telling everyone, oh my gosh, I came upon this beaver pond. I can't believe it. And they're just like, oh honey, there's no beavers here. And I was like, so it was really like my little zone, you know. It's like, okay, I can enjoy this. But then over the years, kind of the river area habitat was getting more degraded. Like there didn't used to be star thistle. Now it's covered in star thistle. There's a lot of off-road vehicles driving through. So in 2019, talking with a group around climate change and what can we do to promote climate regeneration? Like what can we actually do? And in that conversation, it's like, well, the beavers are doing it. We just need to shine a light and be, you know, stop those voices that say they don't live here. They're obviously here. Uh-huh. And then we started all researching, you know, where are the beavers from? Oh, they really are from here. Oh, wow. They're providing such a lush habitat and they're doing so much good. Is that, you know, just a fluke, or do they always do that? And so just the more research, it was like, wow, oh my goodness, we stumbled upon Eager Ben Goldfarb's book and really saw that there's a beaver movement happening in this country. We just need to bring the information to our area. So then that's what we started to do. And taking walks out to the beaver habitat, because then people can see, I mean, it is so fun to take people out there because there's just people who live here, who grew up here, just don't equate lush ponds to this area. So when they're there, I mean, everybody just lights up and they're like, wow, what can we do to help? You know, they just want to like help our organization after they get in there. So it's so inspiring and fun.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the awesome magic of it, getting uh-huh people out there. Yeah, they realize, like, we can, you know, walk right in, you go barefoot into the river. It's nothing to be scared about. And it's like, you when they connect with it and feel that cold water on a hot day and see the huge pond, it's just so right obvious. And then they have this personal connection. And so people, they really get inspired. And it inspires us every time we take uh-huh a group out there.
Love it. Now, I don't know anything about muskrat and nutria, but do we agree that they do not do the function of the beavers?
I have muskrat and they swim in the beaver pond, but they do not create a beaver pond. They don't create a pond at all. Okay. So yeah, they definitely don't. And yeah, I've only heard the kind of negative things about nutria and I don't really know anything about them. So
yeah, but they're no substitute for our beaver.
No, exactly, not yeah at all.
Beavers are the only ones that create their dams. Mm-hmm. And so that's, yeah, like that right there. They're mm-hmm ecosystem engineers. They're the animal that alters its environment more than any animal on earth besides humans.
You guys, this has been wonderful. I thank you so much for your time. This is fascinating and it's dispelled so many myths in my mind that I've lived with my whole life, which is, I'm ashamed to say. Thank you so
we
much.
We won't blame you.
This has been an episode of Living Downstream, and I am your host, Julie Lowe. I've been speaking with Audrey Taub and Cowper Leinhardt of the Slow Beaver Brigade. If you dropped in late or missed any part of this interview or any interview in our series, you could find past episodes at umpquawatersheds.org. Thank you for listening.